Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Okay, so we were, I began to read Majjhima 95, the Chāṅkī Sutta, which is a illustration of the taking a living community of practitioners who can provide apprenticeship in practice of meditation as a looking for reliable teachers, qualities to look for. Okay, so we began yesterday with the Chāṅkī, this well-known senior Brahmin, encouraging the rest of the Brahmins to go and visit with him, visit the Buddha. Then the Brahmin Chāṅkī, together with a large company of Brahmins, went to the Blessed One and exchanged greetings with him. When this courteous and amiable talk was finished, he sat down at one side. Now on that occasion, the Blessed One was seated, finishing some amiable talk with some very senior Brahmins. At the time, sitting in the assembly, was a Brahmin student named Kapatika. Young, shaven-headed, 16 years old, he was a master of the three Vedas with their vocabularies, liturgy, phonology, and etymology, and the histories as a fifth. Skilled in philology and grammar, he was fully versed in natural philosophy and in the marks of a great being. While the very senior Brahmins were conversing with the Blessed One, he repeatedly broke in and interrupted their talk. Then the Blessed One rebuked the Brahmin student Kapatika, thus, let not the venerable Bharadvaja break in and interrupt the talk of the very senior Brahmins while they are conversing. Let the venerable Bharadvaja wait until the talk is finished. When this was said, the Brahmin Chāṅkī said to the Blessed One, let not Master Gotama rebuke the Brahmin student Kapatika. The Brahmin student Kapatika is a clansman. He is very learned. He has good delivery. He is wise. He is capable of taking part in this discussion with Master Gotama. Then the Blessed One thought, surely, since the Brahmins honor him thus, the Brahmin student Kapatika must be accomplished in the scriptures of the three Vedas. Then the Brahmin student Kapatika thought, when the recluse Gotama catches my eye, I shall ask him a question. Then, knowing with his own mind the thought in the Brahmin student Kapatika's mind, the Blessed One turned his eye towards him. Then the Brahmin student Kapatika thought, the recluse Gotama has turned towards me. Suppose I ask him a question. Then he said to the Blessed One, Master Gotama, in regard to the ancient Brahmanic hymns that have come down through oral transmission, preserved in the collections, the Brahmins come to the definite conclusion. Only this is true. Anything else is wrong. What does Master Gotama say about this? How then, Bharadvaja, and Bharadvaja is a clan, is a clan name. How then, Bharadvaja, among the Brahmins, is there even a single Brahmin who says thus? I know this, I see this, only this is true, anything else is wrong. No, Master Gotama. How then, Bharadvaja, among the Brahmins, is there even a single teacher or a single teacher's teacher back to the seventh generation of teachers who says thus, I know this, I see this, only this is true, anything else is wrong. No, Master Gotama. How then, Bharadvaja, the ancient Brahmin seers, creators of the hymns, the composers of the hymns, whose ancient hymns that were formerly chanted uttered and compiled, the Brahmins nowadays still chant and repeat, repeating what was spoken and reciting what was recited. That is, Attaka, Vamaka, Vamadeva, Vesamita, Yamataki. Angirasa, Bharadvaja, Vaseta, Kasapa, and Bhagu. And these are all Brahmin clans, ancient rishis. These are ancient rishis whom the Brahmins regarded as divinely inspired, authors of the Vedic hymns. So the Buddha is actually quite knowledgeable of these backgrounds. Did even these ancient Brahmin seers say thus, we know this, we see this, only this is true, anything else is wrong? No, Master Gotama. So, Bharadvaja, it seems that among the Brahmins there is not even a single Brahmin who says thus, I know this, I see this, only this is true, anything else is wrong. And among the Brahmins there is not even a single teacher or a single teacher's teacher back to the seventh generation of teachers who says thus, I know this, I see this, only this is true, anything else is wrong. And the ancient Brahmin seers, the creators of the hymns, the composers of the hymns, even these ancient Brahmin seers did not say thus, we know this, we see this, only this is true, anything else is wrong. Suppose there were a file of blind men, each in touch with the next. The first one does not see, the middle one does not see, and the last one does not see. So too, Bharadvaja, in regard to their statement, the Brahmins seem to be like a file of blind men. The first one does not see, the middle one does not see, and the last one does not see. What do you think, Bharadvaja? That being so, does not the faith of the Brahmins turn out to be groundless? The Brahmins all honor this not only out of faith, Master Gotama, they also honor it as oral tradition. Bharadvaja, first you took your stand on faith, now you speak of oral tradition. There are five things, Bharadvaja, that may turn out in two different ways here and now. What five? Faith, approval, oral tradition, reason cogitation, and reflective acceptance of a view. And the footnote on that, of course, it gives the Pali words for those. But of these five grounds for arriving at a conviction, the first two seem to be primarily emotive, the third to be a blind acceptance of a tradition, and the last two primarily rational or cognitive. The two different ways each may turn out are true and false. So those are faith, approval, oral tradition, reason cogitation, and reflective acceptance of a view. These five things may turn out in two different ways here and now. Now, something may be fully accepted out of faith, yet it may be empty, hollow, and false. But something else may not be fully accepted out of faith, yet it may be factual, true, and unmistaken. Again, something may be fully approved of, well, and it goes through these five, fully approved of, well transmitted, well cogitated, well reflected upon, yet it may be empty, hollow, and false. But something else may not be well reflected upon, yet it may be factual, true, and unmistaken. Under these conditions, it is not proper for a wise person who preserves truth to come to the definite conclusion, only this is true, anything else is wrong. So the footnote on that is not proper for him to come to this conclusion because he has not personally ascertained the truth of his conviction, but only accepts it on a ground that is not capable of yielding certainty. But Master Gotama, in what way is there preservation of truth? How does one preserve truth? We ask Master Gotama about the preservation of truth. Or the Sachanulakana, which is safeguarding of truth, protection of truth. That's it. If a person has faith, Bharadvaja, he preserves truth when he says, my faith is thus, but he does not yet come to the definite conclusion. Only this is true. Anything else is wrong. In this way, Bharadvaja, there is the preservation of truth. In this way, he preserves truth. In this way, we describe the preservation of truth. But as yet, there is no discovery of truth. And the word that is used, discovery of truth, is satyanubodha, or awakening to truth, would be another way of translating it. If a person approves of something, if he receives it, so going through the different bases, if a person approves of something, if he receives an oral tradition, if he reaches a conclusion based on reason cogitation, or if he gains a reflective acceptance of a view, he preserves truth when he says, "My reflective acceptance of a view is thus." But he does not yet come to the definite conclusion. Only this is true. Anything else is wrong. In this way, too, Bharadvaja, there is the preservation of truth. In this way, he preserves truth. In this way, we describe the preservation of truth. But as yet, there is no discovery of truth. In that way, Master Gotama, there is the preservation of truth. In that way, one preserves truth. In that way, we recognize the preservation of truth. But in what way, Master Gotama, is there discovery of truth? In what way does one discover truth? We ask Master Gotama about the discovery of truth. Here, Bharadvaja, a bhikkhu may be living in dependence on some village or town. Then a householder or a householder's son goes to him and investigates him in regard to three kinds of states. In regard to states based on greed, in regard to states based on hate, in regard to states based on delusion. Are there in this Venerable One any states based on greed such that, with his mind obsessed by those states, while not knowing he might say, "I know," or while not seeing he might say, "I see," or he might urge others to act in a way that would lead to their harm and suffering for a long time. As he investigates him, he comes to know there are no such states based on greed in this Venerable One. The bodily behavior and the verbal behavior of this Venerable One are not those of one affected by greed. And the Dhamma that this Venerable One teaches is profound, hard to see, and hard to understand, peaceful and sublime, unattainable by mere reasoning, subtle to be experienced by the wise. This Dhamma cannot easily be taught by one affected by greed. When he has investigated him and has seen that he is purified from states based on greed, he next investigates him in regard to states based on hate. Are there in this Venerable One any states based on hate such that, with his mind obsessed by those states, he might, and goes through the same thing, he might urge others to act in a way that would lead to their harm and suffering for a long time. As he investigates them, he comes to know there are no such states based on hate in this Venerable One. The bodily behavior and the verbal behavior of this Venerable One are not those of one affected by hate. And the Dhamma that this Venerable One teaches is profound to be experienced by the wise. This Dhamma cannot easily be taught by one affected by hate. When he has investigated him and has seen that he is purified from states based on hate, he next investigates him in regard to states based on delusion. Are there in this Venerable One any states based on delusion such that, with his mind obsessed by those states, while not knowing he might say, "I know," or while not seeing he might say, "I see," or he might urge others to act in a way that would lead to their harm and suffering for a long time. As he investigates him, he comes to know there are no such states based on delusion in this Venerable One. The bodily behavior and the verbal behavior of this Venerable One are not those of one affected by delusion. And the Dhamma that this Venerable One teaches is profound, hard to see, and hard to understand, peaceful and sublime, unattainable by mere reasoning, subtle to be experienced by the wise. The Dhamma This Dhamma cannot easily be taught by one affected by delusion. When he has investigated him and has seen that he is purified from states based on delusion, then he places faith in him. Filled with faith, he visits him and pays respects to him. Having paid respect to him, he gives ear. When he gives ear, he hears the Dhamma. Having heard the Dhamma, he memorizes it and examines the meaning of the teachings he has memorized. When he examines their meaning, he gains a reflective acceptance of those teachings. When he has gained a reflective acceptance of those teachings, zeal springs up. When zeal has sprung up, he applies his will. Having applied his will, he scrutinizes. Having scrutinized, he strives. Resolutely striving, he realizes with the body the supreme truth and sees it by penetrating it with wisdom. In this way, Bharadvaja, there is the discovery of truth. In this way, one discovers truth. In this way, we describe the discovery of truth. But as yet, there is no final arrival at truth. In that way, Master Gotama, there is the discovery of truth. In that way, one discovers truth. In that way, we recognize the discovery of truth. But in what way, Master Gotama, is there the final arrival at truth? In what way does one finally arrive at truth? We ask Master Gotama about the final arrival at truth. The final arrival at truth, Bharadvaja, lies in the repetition, development, and cultivation of those same things. In this way, Bharadvaja, there is the final arrival at truth. In this way, one finally arrives at truth. In this way, we describe the final arrival at truth. In that way, Master Gotama, there is the final arrival at truth. In that way, one finally arrives at truth. In that way, we recognize the final arrival at truth. But what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for the final arrival at truth? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for the final arrival at truth. Striving is most helpful for the final arrival at truth, Bharadvaja. If one does not strive, one will not finally arrive at truth. But because one strives, one does finally arrive at truth. That is why striving is most helpful for the final arrival at truth. But what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for striving? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for striving. Scrutiny is most helpful for striving, Bharadvaja. If one does not scrutinize, one will not strive. But because one scrutinizes, one strives. This is why scrutiny is most helpful for striving. But what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for scrutiny? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for scrutiny. Application of the will is most helpful for scrutiny, Bharadvaja. If one does not apply one's will, one will not scrutinize. But because one applies one's will, one scrutinizes. That is why application of the will is most helpful for scrutiny. But what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for application of the will? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for application of the will. Zeal is most helpful for application of the will, Bharadvaja. If one does not arouse zeal, one will not apply one's will. But because one arouses zeal, one applies one's will. That is why zeal is most helpful for application of the will. But what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for zeal? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for zeal. A reflective acceptance of the teachings is most helpful for zeal, Bharadvaja. If one does not gain a reflective acceptance of the teachings, zeal will not spring up. But because one gains a reflective acceptance of the teachings, zeal springs up. That is why a reflective acceptance of the teachings is most helpful for zeal. But what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for a reflective acceptance of the teachings? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for a reflective acceptance of the teachings. Examination of the meaning is most helpful for a reflective acceptance of the teachings, Bharadvaja. If one does not examine their meaning, one will not gain a reflective acceptance of the teachings. But because one examines their meaning, one gains a reflective acceptance of the teachings. That is why examination of the meaning is most helpful for a reflective acceptance of the teachings. But what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for examination of the meaning? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for examination of meaning. Memorizing the teachings is most helpful for examining the teachings, Bharadvaja. If one does not memorize a teaching, one will not examine its meaning. But because one memorizes a teaching, one examines its meaning. But what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for memorizing the teachings? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for memorizing the teachings. Hearing the Dhamma is most helpful for memorizing the teachings, Bharadvaja. If one does not hear the Dhamma, one will not memorize the teachings. But because one hears the Dhamma, one memorizes the teachings. That is why hearing the Dhamma is most helpful for memorizing the teachings. But what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for hearing the Dhamma? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for hearing the Dhamma. Giving ear is most helpful for hearing the Dhamma, Bharadvaja. If one does not give ear, one will not hear the Dhamma. But because one gives ear, one hears the Dhamma. That is why giving ear is most helpful for hearing the Dhamma. But what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for giving ear? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for giving ear. Paying respect is most helpful for giving ear, Bharadvaja. If one does not pay respect, one will not give ear. But because one pays respect, one gives ear. That is why paying respect is most helpful for giving ear. And what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for paying respect? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for paying respect. Visiting is most helpful for paying respect, Bharadvaja. If one does not visit a teacher, one will not pay respect to him. But because one visits a teacher, one pays respect to him. That is why visiting is most helpful for paying respect. But what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for visiting? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for visiting. Faith is most helpful for visiting, Bharadvaja. If faith in a teacher does not arise, one will not visit him. But because faith in a teacher arises, one visits him. That is why faith is most helpful for visiting. We asked Master Gotama about the preservation of truth, and Master Gotama answered about the preservation of truth. We approve of and accept that answer, and so we are satisfied. We asked Master Gotama about the discovery of truth, and Master Gotama answered about the discovery of truth. We approve of and accept that answer, and so we are satisfied. We asked Master Gotama about the final arrival at truth, and Master Gotama answered about the final arrival at truth. We approve of and accept that answer, and so we are satisfied. We asked Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for the final arrival at truth, and Master Gotama answered about the thing most helpful for the final arrival at truth. We approve of and accept that answer, and so we are satisfied. Whatever we asked Master Gotama about, that he answered us. We approve of and accept that answer, and so we are satisfied. Formerly, Master Gotama, we used to think, who are these bald-pated recluses, these swarthy menial offspring of the kinsman's feet, that they would understand the Dhamma? But Master Gotama has indeed inspired in me love for recluses, confidence in recluses, reverence for recluses. Magnificent, Master Gotama, magnificent. From today, let Master Gotama remember me as a lay follower who has gone to him for refuge for life. So, there's him. You notice that some of these things are actually, say, like reflective acceptance of the teaching, and some of it, and there's sort of memorization, which is the same, sort of similar to oral tradition, so that and faith, but and You say, well, what's the difference between, I mean, he sort of tore that down and said that's not valid, but then he gave these as basis for, but I think it's important to recognize that those grounds that were taken, say faith, approval, oral tradition, reason, cogitation, reflective acceptance of a view, were the basis for the view, only this is true, anything else is wrong. Whereas what the Buddha is saying, when he points to these other things of, say, similar to faith and acceptance and memorization, those are for the application of effort. And those are the basis of striving, basis of application of will, basis of investigation. So it's a very different perspective. I think it's helpful to realize that. And also just how much the Buddha emphasizes that those conditions for this is not a passive receptance of somebody else's idea of truth. There's a whole process of effort and investigation that it needs to be applied. Yeah, and then also independence on the receiving the guidance and example of a valid teacher. This always struck me, from the time I first started reading suttas. I'm saying, okay, this is really important. It's a really important sutta. Questions? Yeah.
Comments. In the very beginning, when he was talking about the originators of the Vedas,
yes,
not even being able to say "I know," "I see,"
right,
is that commonly known as the fact that they just, there wasn't anybody who was saying, "This is what that experience is."
Well, I think even in the Buddha's time, 2,500 years ago, those were traditions that had been passed on for a long, long time. These hymns, the basis of their beliefs and systems have been around for a long, long time.
From the 800 years
prior.
Prior to
the Buddhist time. Okay. That's a long time.
Yeah. Just interesting that even the composers of the Vedas, which I guess is where one assumes that they...
Well, I think one of the things that is also that the Vedas are these are hymns and structures of belief that are fundamentally a system of kind of propitiation, trying to get and a sacrifice. So using ceremony, ritual in order to gain the system of capricious gods,
right.
And of course, it's a very rich tradition that also has its has had it kind of side by side a tradition of samanas,
right.
who were doing all sorts of things, all sorts of other practices, but the mainstream Vedic tradition is fundamentally a kind of faith and sacrifice. Those are the kind of the fundamentals.
Rooted more in like maintaining a material culture or a societal structure rather than any kind of spiritual inspiration at the very beginning.
As we would, especially as we would define it, because actually most religion was. I mean, you think say Judaic religions were religions of sacrifice in the early, dealing with, you know, how do you deal with an all-powerful God, even if you've only got one of them? Yeah. I mean, in Hindu or the Vedic traditions, and they had all sorts of gods, but you know, still the problem was, you know, how do you deal with this?
Which sutta is that again?
Majjhima 95.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. In that sutta, there were seem like some different lists in answer to the question. And we would say, okay, you know, step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah.
Are any of those explained in other sutras or named as, you know, these are the seven such and such?
Yes, although I'm not sure exactly. There's a whole series of suttas in the Anguttara Nikaya that I don't know if it's exactly like this, but they're similar. But they tend to be that series of arising of faith, going to see a teacher, listening to the teaching, memorizing the teaching, reflecting, applying. Those are come up in many, many places. But I don't know that it's set down as, you know, like we know, okay, the five powers, the seven factors of enlightenment. I don't know that it's as categorical as that. But it does come up in many places.
Does it appear in any of the numerical, any of those sets in the numerical?
It does, but whether they have a name or not. That's like the because of course the Anguttara Nikaya it's all the numerical teachings. So there's a really good dictionary in Thai. Prapayuto has compiled, and he actually has sort of just headings translated into English. And it's actually available in PDF now. And then he goes through, it's like a dictionary of Buddhism, a numerical dictionary of Buddhism. So that it goes through all the ones, the twos, the threes, the fours, and all the headings with what they're called. And so that's and his translations are very good. He's very thoughtful in his translating into English, even though like the Thai, it's all explained, and in the English, it's just sort of just phrases and headings. But it's a real, and so then some of those, and I'd have to go and take a look and sort of see. But yeah, I've got it. PDF on my iPad. So it's a really handy one.
Is it cross-reference to the particular sutta?
Yes, yes, yes.
Say with Majjhima Nikaya 95.
It would. Well, that's another thing. It's cross-referenced in the Pali, like in the sense of, because the way that, say, Majjhima is then, is in the Pali, is broken up into three books. And then each book is then, is not referenced by suttas. It's sort of, say, like this. Okay, here, like, okay, Majjhima, the Changi Sutta is Majjhima 2, 164 to 176.
Yeah, I've heard it says folios, it's organized by folios, like they have it in brackets, mm-hmm. where the folio ends and the next one starts.
But that's, so it's a bit of, sometimes a bit of work to sort of, but these are all have the like, it's up in this corner, and that's the case with all, like the Sanyutta and Anguttara, then Bhikkhu Bodhi has put that in. And actually, and then in some of these, there's also a secondary way of, because there's several different accepted ways of organizing the Pali. Pali Text Society is one, Sri Lanka and Thai are another.
In other places where I've seen that similar listing, I think it often refers to the gradual training.
And that's another really good, and that's part of the gradual training. Well, the gradual training covers another area of, because then the gradual training usually take you into the meditation practice as well. And this is more in terms of a bit broader. But there's a great so the Ganaka Moggallana Sutta is a great. I can't remember the number of that. It's to Moggallana, the accountant, because the accountant says, you know, when we learn accountancy, we learn it, you know, by learning, you know, one ones and twos twos. And is there a similar way of learning the Buddha's teaching in a kind of a gradual way? And so, yeah, 107. It's a great discourse on the gradual path, gradual training, teaching. Okay, yeah.
Another sutta that treats this very similar topic of like how you validate a teacher by living with them is the Vimamsaka Sutta.
Oh, yes. Of course, which is the examination sutta, or the by examination. Okay, we haven't even got to Ajahn Jeff's today.